country is starting to do very well. Our economy is blazing. Jobs are at a record level. 2.7 million jobs created since the election. When you look at what's happening to our country, it's incredible. And the fundamentals are so strong. The stock market, I just see with all of the ups and downs since Election Day, is up 37%. It did a little bit of a correction. In fact, I started to say, you know, I was in it for like 13, 14 months from election. I say, is this sucker ever going down a little bit? This is a little embarrassing. It was up 100, up 200, up 1,000, up 150, up 90, up 63. I said, good, that's better. And thanks to our massive tax cuts, millions of Americans are getting to keep a great percentage of their money instead of paying it to a government that throws it out the window. The era of economic surrender is over.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, what a squeaker it was for the markets this week. We had stocks bouncing back and forth. More volatility continues as this market tries to find a footing. But a late-day rally on Friday brought stocks into positive territory. Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. Joining me in Hour 1 from Stock Charts will be Art Hill. He thinks his bull market is intact. He is taking a close look at commodities, and we've been talking about that. You're going to want to hear what Art has to say about oil and some of the base metals, and also about the basic thrust of the market and its leadership. Also, in the latter half of the hour, Ned Schmidt will be joining us. He's very bullish on gold and commodities. And by the way, precious metals is something Art Hill is also watching too, looking to see if we can break out above 1400 level on gold. That coming up, and myself in Hour 1.
I'm glad you're coming with yourself in Hour 1 there, Jim.
Well, how else?
And I'm John Loeffler, and I'm here with myself as well. That's wonderful. There we are. One thing is we've learned this year is that volatility is back. We've gone for a big bump here in the first part of the year. First 10% correction in 2 years. I mean, it was a pretty level ocean all that time. Now a more cautionary tone is in the markets. Interest rates are rising along with inflation. The economy does seem to be getting a second wind now, and this has all sorts of implications for the markets and for investors. So what we'll do on the big picture today is explain all of this to you and try to paint a picture of the new environment in which we find ourselves, where we expect economic growth to pick up, inflation and interest rates to go up, and commodities and financials to become the new market leaders, all coming up as part of the big picture right here on the Financial Sense News Hour. And as we do at the beginning of every single week, we take a look at what has happened all week long in the markets. Ryan Poplava is out this week. Jim Poplava sitting in for him. Jim, we've had 6 days of market storms, which led to corrections and then an upsurge in stocks. And this week, it's been all over the place, but we did end up positive.
Yeah, let's take a look at the numbers. In fact, we didn't get into positive territory until towards the end of the day on Friday because we were doing an interview with Art Hill in the morning, and the markets were in negative territory. At the end of the week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up about 0.4%. The S&P 500 up a little over 0.5%. And of course, the NASDAQ Composite still leading. That was up almost 1.4%. So the markets are still in positive territory for the year. But I'll tell you, John, we got off to a rocky start this week as the markets tried. If there was a story this week, it was the 50-day moving average. Just as the 200-day moving average was sort of support for the market when we went through the correction, the 50-day moving average has been a hurdle for the markets to get through. And that's what we were doing just about every single day this week. We would broach the 50-day average, and then there would be some piece of news or some kind of thing, and there'd be selling at the end of the day, and we'd end up down for the session. So it was a battle for the 50-day was, I guess, the best way to describe this week. And, you know, if we go back to the opening of the week on Tuesday, markets declined with an earnings disappointment that came on Tuesday from Walmart that had a very disappointing fourth quarter. that stock has been moving. One of the big movers in the Dow last year, it had a real nice move from the 70 up to the $90 level. They were bringing on their online, and they thought, okay, this is the behemoth that is able to compete with Amazon. But the results were very disappointing. And of course, that threw the markets into a downturn on Tuesday. The other thing, too, at the beginning of the week, is we saw Treasury yields really start to spike. We were up over 2.9%. on the 10-year Treasury. The Treasury has been tapping the market for just hundreds of billions of dollars over the last couple of weeks. There was a 2-year Treasury auction on Wednesday with the yield on 2-year notes climbing to a little over 2.2%. I believe that yield is going to be working its way higher, especially as we get closer to March, when the Fed is widely anticipated to raise interest rates for the first time this year. And that could bring the 2-year note a little bit higher. But most of the sectors have been finishing, with the exception maybe of technology, which has been doing fairly well throughout the week. In fact, a couple stories on the technology front. Qualcomm increased its bid for NXP semiconductors in an effort to thwart a competing bid coming from Broadcom. So the chip stocks have been a very important mover in the markets this week.
Okay, let's flip over to the Fed. I know the markets were eagerly awaiting the release of the Fed minutes from the January meeting, waiting to see whether they would be hawkish or not. What happened in that camp?
On Wednesday, the Fed released its minutes, and you know, there's all these little nuances that come out when you try to parse what the Fed means. The Fed is now inserting the word further. So what does that mean? It says, look, we are going to keep raising interest rates. So by saying further rates, they're not just saying, well, we may think about rates in the future. They're saying, no, further rate hikes are necessary. And that was a clear message to the market. And you saw the futures probabilities on Fed rate hikes go up for March. It's somewhere around 83%, and it's almost close to 60% for June. So the markets are already anticipating, and maybe this is the Fed's way of alerting the markets that, look, guys, we said 3 this year. Of course, some are saying if inflation heats up, we could basically even see 4. But right now, it looks like 3, and that was confirmed on Wednesday with what came out in the Fed minutes. A couple other things came out on Wednesday that was moving the markets. Weekly mortgage applications have fallen for the next second week in a row. And the other thing is existing home sales decreased by 3.2% in January. So, John, we are now seeing some of the highest mortgage rates that we've seen in a couple of years. And that's translating into the credit markets and the debt markets. We'll talk about this when we get to the big picture, but consumer debt is at a record level. It's almost approaching $13 trillion, a little over that, actually. And a good majority of that is coming with mortgage applications. So a lot of people are going out there. They know the Fed is raising interest rates. Their real estate brokers are saying, hey, look, mortgage rates are going up. If you're going to buy a home, do it now and lock in a low rate while you can still do that. And so this is having a little bit of bite on the housing market. Thursday, you know, we had another attempt to breach the 50-day average. It just didn't work. Now, one of the things that we are beginning to see this week, and we talked about it last week, we'll talk about it in the big picture today, is we're seeing a movement in the energy stocks. Now, one of the things that Art Hill and I talked about in the first hour is the commodities have been on a move, whether it's gold, which is in an uptrend, oil, which is in an uptrend, copper, which is in an uptrend, but the stocks have not confirmed. Energy stocks had a hard time, and especially during this last correction. And we're now starting to see a move out in energy. So we'll have to wait and see if this is the leadership role, which I think is coming to this sector.
So by Friday, they actually did it. Not a bad way to end the week.
Yeah, it was. We broached the 50-day moving average. We took it out and broke through. So that was a good news. In fact, some of the sectors doing well was energy, technology, and real estate. So once again, we're looking for what I call this transitional phase and a transitional role for leadership where energy starts to move to the forefront. A lot of that will depend on the price of energy. But something else that was rather interesting on Friday is just as energy was bouncing off its 200-day moving average, We also saw something happen in the bond market is the rise in yields began to lose some of its momentum with the 10-year Treasury note backing down below 2.9%. We actually ended the day at 2.87%. And along with that, we saw a movement in some of the interest-sensitive sectors in the market, especially utilities and telecom, were having a good day on the market. So it looks like right now we may have a oversold condition in the Treasury market that may be correcting. But so, John, overall, not a bad way to end the week.
And as Jim said, we'll discuss the current environment in which we now find ourselves, given this most recent correction, that and much more coming up on the Financial Sense NewsHour at financialsense.com.
Interest rates are rising, and the Fed intends to raise interest rates even further. As rates rise, the value of your bond funds will fall. Are you prepared for the next bond bear market? It has been almost 36 years since we've seen the last, and there's a high probability that another bear market in bonds has just begun. Long-term interest rates have been rising steadily since last fall. It's time to think about protecting capital. That's where Financial Sense Advisors can help you. Protect capital by designing a customized portfolio that can provide you with predictable income. Don't put your hard-earned wealth at risk. Call us today.
So give us a call at Financial Sense Advisors. As investment fiduciaries, we put your interest first. Let us help you design a portfolio that provides predictable income and protects your capital. Call now, toll free, 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939 to let us help you design a portfolio providing predictable income and protecting your capital. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. You know, Financial Sense NewsHour listeners should remember that our premium members are able to hear the weekday Financial Sense NewsHour featuring interviews with top economic commentators and experts. If you're not a member, here's one of the interviews you missed this week.
For 2018, we're telling business owners who are positively correlated to the economy. Obviously, there are counter-cyclical things like non-residential construction. But for most of us that are correlated to the economy, what we're warning them of is a slowdown, not a breakdown, but a slowdown in global economic expansion in the second half of this year. We have leading indicators, several that are showing it, others that we believe are on the cusp of showing it. The danger there, Chris, is that if you think it's anything like 2008, 2009, you're going to way overestimate the negative impact.
Well, volatility has returned back to the stock market this week as stocks gave up some of their gains, but still positive for the year. We hope this continues, or will it? Joining us on the program from Stock Charts is Art Hill. Art, let's go back just a couple of weeks and talk about when you see a correction in the magnitude that we did, we're, you know, in a 6-day period, we were down over 10%. Talk technically what that does to the market, because we bounced back. We got almost 60% of the losses back, but we've been sort of meandering here back and forth. What happens technically when you go through a correction like that?
Well, I kind of like to think of it as a boxer, you know, that's been knocked to the floor after a solid left hook or something. And the boxer is not knocked out. In other words, we're not in a bear market, but there's been a destabilization and the boxer is standing up and is a little bit wobbly. So it takes a little bit of time to get, you know, the footing back and get the stability back and get the bull back on track. So I don't think it was enough to say derail the bull market, but I'm in the camp that we have entered a correction period, but I'm not sure what path that correction might take, because it could be several different paths.
You bring up the analogy. It's like a boxer who's doing real well. And if you take a look at the market since the election of President Trump, it was almost like non-stoppable. Nothing could phase the market. We barely had 2% corrections. So when you're going along like that and all of a sudden you get knocked to the floor, as this market does, Art, is it a matter of time before the market stabilize? In other words, you know, when you get knocked to the floor, you're a little dizzy in the head and you're not thinking as clearly. Is it something that is an adjustment over time and then you get a catalyst, whether it's earnings or something on the economy and the market moves forward?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the catalyst would be, but I think, you know, there are basically two ways to correct, and then the third way would be a combination of the first two. The first way you can correct is with time, by moving sideways. And the second way you can correct is with price moving down. Now, you know, we did test the 200-day moving average intraday on the S&P 500 and bounced pretty sharply off of it. So we've definitely had a price correction, the fact that we did drop, you know, 10%, as you said. But I don't know if we've had enough time for that correction to fully manifest itself. And corrections are usually a combination of price and time. So I'm thinking we need a little bit more time, and there could be some more frustration in trading over the next few weeks.
Art, one of the things that struck me about this correction is the things that you would normally expect in corrections in the past, and I call it the kind of the risk on and the risk off trade. You would usually see, if you had a correction like this, you would see treasuries rally, you would see consumer staples, utilities, and healthcare. None of that happened this time around. Does that strike you as something different, or can you explain technically why that might be?
Well, that was fairly unusual, the fact that treasuries didn't even bounce when stocks took their hit. And maybe that was part of the reason. You know, there were a number of things working that were kind of, there's some disconnects in the market in the latter part of January. You know, for about a 3-week period, you had the VIX and the S&P 500 moving up together. Now, the VIX wasn't moving up much at that time, but still it was a disconnect there. And things kind of unraveled there in February. And I think the fact that utilities went down, as well as consumer staples for that matter, was the fact that treasury yields were moving so sharply higher. And that usually is a negative for utilities, and that's probably why they didn't bounce. And I think consumer staples were kind of losing their defensive luster as well when you had treasury yields rising and money moving into treasury bonds.
So as you look at this market, one of the things that we've seen is the dominance of large cap stocks. In fact, the Wall Street Journal had an article the other day talking about Amazon owns the market and how the impact of stocks like an Amazon or a Google or an Apple have on the market. When you're looking at this market, one of the things that technicians follow is the advanced decline line to confirm the upward move. What does that advanced decline line look like now with this stock market?
Well, what we had when we had the sharp decline in February was we had what I would call a bearish breadth thrust. And that's because we had so much participation on the downside over a 9-day period that pushed some advanced decline indicators to bearish extremes that normally suggest that you're in some sort of a corrective environment. And these indicators had been bullish since March of 2016 when they got their bullish breadth thrust. So this was the first downward breadth thrust. And you're right, the fact that small caps are not keeping up is a bit of a concern, but still large caps are the driver of this market. And the S&P 500 is not over until the fat lady sings. And the S&P 500, I think, is the fat lady. And as long as the S&P 500 is above its 200-day and doing fine, I don't think we're in a bear market. And small caps and mid caps will continue to muddle along.
One thing that has come out of this correction is technology stocks have held up rather well. In fact, they still seem to be doing very well. When you have one sector dominate like that and you go through a correction, do you sometimes get a change in leadership, Art, or do you look for the same leaders to confirm the trend? Because we had technology doing well, we've had financials doing well, we had consumer discretionary doing well, and they seem to be leading out of this correction.
Well, I think it's a bit different. I'm not saying it's different this time. I'm not going to go that far. But, you know, we're still in this same bull market from, you know, this massive run, as you said, since the Trump election, and technology was leading, and then financials finally caught hold at the end of 2017 and have been showing some leadership here. And so that's another reason why it's hard to think that we're in a bear market when you have technology strong and also some leadership coming from financials and consumer discretionary to a certain extent, but not as much, I would think. But one thing about technology, you know, it's still like 23% of the S&P 500, so it is clearly the dominant sector in the S&P 500.
I want to talk about some other sectors, and one of your analysts, John Murphy, talks about intermarket analysis, and he talks about when you get close to a topping process, as we did, for example, in 2000 and then in 2007, you have bonds peak first, and it looks to me, if you take a look at where we are today in yields and where we were 2 years ago, that bonds have peaked, and you know, this failure of treasuries to rally as a hedge with this correction seems to me to confirm that. The next market to confirm or peak is usually stocks and then commodities. Let's talk about commodities for a bit, and let's begin that discussion by looking at the dollar. What's your view of the dollar here, which has been falling since, what, the beginning of last year?
Yeah, the dollar has been in a bit of a free fall. And I admit to being a bit perplexed as to, you know, what's driving the dollar down. It might be a fear of upcoming deficits in the U.S., because usually when you have rising interest rates or treasury yields, that's usually positive for the dollar. And then when I look at the spread between the U.S. 10-year and the German 10-year, this has been rising since September. And it's been in a sharp advance since the middle of January to the end of February here, but yet the dollar is hardly reacting. So there's something that's putting downward pressure on the dollar. And if I look at the chart of the dollar, you know, we moved to a new low in January, late January. We've kind of been going sideways for about 4 weeks, and that might just be it's a downtrend, and it's stalling. So that's kind of like a consolidation within a downtrend, which kind of makes it a bearish continuation pattern. So if we break down below those February lows, of course, we're going to new lows, and that could put more upward pressure on gold and oil because they seem to benefit when the dollar moves lower.
Yeah, let's talk about commodities because the dollar began to fall beginning of last year. And then just around summer, we started to see a pickup in commodity prices. You saw that in the CRB. You saw it in oil prices. You saw it in basic commodities. Would you look for that trend to continue if this dollar continues to fall as it might do?
Yeah, when I look at the price of gold, I see a long-term uptrend in gold. I mean, it did hit a 52-week high in January, and it's kind of doing the opposite of the dollar, which hit a 52-week low at the end of January. And then gold has moved sideways for about 4 weeks, so it's consolidating after a 52-week high, and that looks like it's a consolidation within an uptrend. I mean, I try to stay on the side of the bigger trend. And when gold hits a 52-week high, that tells me the bigger trend is up. And if it's stalling after that new high, it tells me it's just a rest within that trend. So I would keep a bullish bias on gold, a bearish bias on the dollar, and have a bullish bias on oil because it's been tracing out higher highs and higher lows since the summer of 2017. And it pulled back a little bit in February and is getting a nice bounce over the last week and a half or so.
Art, what about the stocks of the commodities? Because energy stocks have not done as well as the commodity itself. And likewise, if you look at gold stocks, even though you have gold, which is doing very well, ETFs like the GDX are not doing as well. Do you look for the stocks eventually to confirm what's happening in the commodity? I guess when I'm looking at the stocks compared to the commodity is doing much better.
I totally see what you're looking at. And again, there's something out there that, as a technician, I don't know as much about the fundamentals, but there must be something out there that's keeping downward pressure on the miners because, you know, gold is up like 2% year to date and the GDX is down 6.5% year to date. So I would focus mainly on gold and the dollar and keep the miners kind of secondary. Because if you look at the GDX chart, it's gone nowhere for over a year. It's just been one big trading range. You know, it bounced off support, but you know, I can't really make heads or tails of it.
So, Art, when you see something like this happen, we have a lot of anomalies in this correction. For example, we just talked about two of them. You've got the commodities doing well. You've got energy. You've got gold, but the stocks of those two aren't doing well. And then also you have treasuries, which typically in a downturn in stocks or a corrective phase, and especially one as steep as we had in just a week, you would have treasuries, utilities, staples, healthcare do as well. They're not doing as well. So it seems like there's a lot of anomalies out there in the marketplace that one can find a number of reasons why that might be. But is that a market that is either one in transition or number two, confused about what just happened?
Well, you mentioned transition and we could be transitioning from a deflationary environment to an inflationary environment. Because we've been in a deflationary environment for decades with the long-term downtrend in treasury yields. And a lot of people only know that environment as far as trading is concerned. A deflationary or disinflation, I shouldn't say deflation, that's too strong of a word, but I would say disinflation. But I think we are turning the corner now, and the bond market is certainly signaling that we are heading towards a little more inflation because it is adjusting and adjusting in a violent manner. And the bond market is going to be the most sensitive to any changes in inflation. And I think that's the signal it is sending. We're making a transition there.
Yeah, because you can see that in a number of ways. You can see it in the fall in the dollar. Number two, you can see the rise in commodities. And then also, I think, Art, you can see it in the currencies of commodity producing countries like Australia, Canada, Brazil. They're also doing well along with emerging markets.
Yeah, definitely. Those commodity currencies, the Australian dollars pulled back a little bit, but you know, it hit a new high in January, so I would expect it to continue higher if commodities continue higher and the dollar moves lower.
So given what you're seeing right now, as an investor or as a technician, is there anything that stands out to you? In other words, when you're looking at the charts, you look at something and go, that chart tells me something. Do you see anything like that in the charts that you review?
Well, I'm looking at two groups in particular. I'm seeing a lot of strength continued in the finance sector and in regional banks because they're very close to a 52-week high, the KRE. So they're benefiting from the advance that we've had in treasury yields and possibly a steepening in the yield curve. And then the other one I'm watching would be energy. Because oil remains above $62 a barrel, it remains in an uptrend. And as you noted before, the discrepancy between gold and gold stocks, you have that between oil and some energy-related stocks where oil's up 4% year-to-date, but the energy oil and gas equipment services SPDR is down like 10% year-to-date. But when I look at the chart, I see a potential support area that it's at right now. It's been firming, and if oil stays in its uptrend, I would expect energy stocks to get a bounce.
You know, one of the things that you always see towards the end of a market movement, you know, once again, going back to intermarket analysis, bonds peak first, then stocks. But towards the end, before stocks peak, you see a leadership emerge, and that leadership comes from the energy sector. And then, of course, towards the end, when you're probably close to a recession, you see energy still leading with rising commodity prices, the last asset class to peak, but you also start to see consumer staples come in. So I guess if you look at these trends, a falling dollar, you have rising commodities, and you've got rising energy prices. At some point, Art, you would expect to see this unity between the commodity price, oil itself, and the oil stocks.
Yes, I would think that the uptrend in oil and the successful pullback that we had in early February, we've already bounced, would be positive for oil. Copper is also in an uptrend, so I'd expect that would benefit some of the copper miners as well.
Yeah, because copper's up, they always call it Dr. Copper. So when you see strong copper prices, that sort of confirms the commodity trend and also the economic trend. So do you think these sectors are at a good point of entry at this point, or would you look for more of a breakout in both sectors before you would place a trade?
Well, I think the tighter commodity plays, such as copper and copper miners, are okay. And oil and the energy sector are okay. If you get into the broader groups like metals and mining, then it gets a little bit more fuzzier. But another group I'm seeing strength in is steel. The steel ETF is near a 52-week high as well.
Is there anything that gives you a sense of caution? Because one of the things that I have mentioned here on the program from several technicians is that prior to the big sell-off, outside, as you mentioned, the break-off in breadth, there wasn't a lot other than maybe the market being overbought that would have told you we were about to experience a severe correction.
No, there wasn't a lot, except the move started getting parabolic. And it's hard. You can't pick a parabolic top. I mean, that's just really almost impossible. But the biggest concern I would have is I'm measuring the move basically as it started from the November 2016 low, because the last decent correction you had was in the August, September, October period of 2016. So this bull run went from around 2100 to 2850 on the S&P. And my concern is that, you know, we could zigzag down and have an extended correction that would retrace about half of that move from November 2016 to January 2018 and take us back into the 2500 area.
So given that, if you were an investor, your best advice for investors right now, stay the course, keep some powder dry, or maybe some selective entries like financials or energy?
Well, that's what I would do. Is cash is a position. It doesn't mean you have to have all cash, but you can, you know, raise cash in your portfolio and not be fully invested at a point where it looks like we're in a correction. But, you know, there are industry groups and sectors that are exhibiting strength. And so I think you can allocate to those for a portion of the portfolio, and a portion can be left in cash to keep the powder dry.
All right. Well, Art, as we close, I wonder if you'd tell our listeners about your software program, Stock Charts. To me, it's one of the best on the web out there. I use it. In fact, my favorite page I start every single morning is your market summary page, which covers all the major markets, indexes, sectors, currencies, international markets, the bond market, you name it, you've got it.
Yeah, that market summary page is also the page I find myself going to again and again, because you can go up and you can change the date settings to look at intraday, week, year to date, to see how everything is performing all on one page. We also, of course, have great charts. You can do point and figure charts, bar charts with dozens of indicators and overlays. And then we do have a great commentary section featuring John Murphy and Martin Pring, and also Greg Schnell writes on our blogs, And he, of course, wrote the book Stock Charts for Dummies. So you can see his comments there on our site as well.
Yeah, I want to mention that his book, Stock Charts for Dummies, it's a fabulous book because it not only explains a lot of things, in other words, how to read charts, what you can do, but also make the most out of your software program. And your website, Art, would you give that as we close?
Yes, that's www.stockcharts.com. And I would say that Greg Snell's book is great because I've been with stock charts for over 10 years and I'm still learning things that we can do on our website.
Oh, it's absolutely amazing. After reading Snell's book, I was amazed at some of the things that I'm able to do with your program now that I wasn't aware of. So it's kind of like looking at a Bloomberg machine because there's so many capabilities of it. Well, listen, Art, I want to thank you for joining us on the Financial Sense News Hour. All the best to you. Have a great weekend.
Great to be here, Jim. You have a good weekend, too.
Do you know what everyone wants? Everyone wants the ability to retire and live well. Sounds easy, but it isn't. It requires careful planning. That is something that everyone knows how to do, and you may need help to plan, implement, and monitor your progress, assessing where you are now and where you want to be in the future. That is where Financial Sense Advisors can help. And unlike many advisors who sell you products you don't need, at Financial Sense Advisors, we are fiduciaries, which means we put your interest first. We do well when you do well.
Call Financial Sense Advisors now and let us help you to make the change from just retiring to thriving in retirement. Call now, toll free, 888-486-3939. Again, that's 888-486-3939. Investment advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. If you're approaching retirement age or concerned about making plans for those retired years and having adequate income, you're going to want to hear our Lifetime Income series every Monday and Tuesday here at FinancialSense.com. Right now, here's a preview of this week's Lifetime Income program.
Joining me on the program is Daniel Borenstein. He's an award-winning columnist for the Bay Area News Group and editorial page editor of the East Bay Times. And Dan, let's talk about the state of pension plans. We're seeing a lot of these pension plans, whether it's California, Illinois, come under pressure now because they're not meeting their investment objectives in terms of meeting their future pension obligations. You've been following things at CalPERS. It's my understanding they're assuming somewhere in the neighborhood of 7% plus for rates of return. And Daniel, as you and I know, that hasn't always been their rate of return.
You know, it's very interesting, Jim, because my feeling about these defined benefit plans is that they're a great idea if they're responsibly managed with responsible financial forecasts. They provide income security that's really important to people. But you've got to start with realistic numbers. And the question you just asked is really important. What has happened at CalPERS is they've continuously been unrealistic about their investment returns. And as a result, they are finding themselves short on money. And that's why they're so badly underfunded. The result of that then is that they have to make up that money. And so they have to turn back to the city for even greater contributions than they would have if they'd done it right to begin with. And that's why we hear about all these cities and state government, for that matter, they're in trouble because now they're being asked to contribute a lot more to make up for the past underfunding. In CalPERS' case right now, they are headed towards an investment target of 7%. That is, they're slowly ratcheting down to that level. And I believe it's next year they will finally hit it. But this is at a time when their own investment advisors say over the next 10 years, they expect to get 6.1. Well, they're going to keep digging a hole, is what that means.
Well, since last summer, commodities have been on the rise. We've seen an increase in the price of oil. Gold has tried to take out 1,400, hasn't been able to do that. But will things be changing as inflation begins to heat up? Joining me on the program is Ned Schmidt. And Ned, I want to begin with the ag sector, which has not been doing as well. I'm looking at the PowerShares DB Agriculture ETF. It's been rising since December, but sort of flattened out. But in general, it has been in a downtrend. So let's begin with the ag sector. What's going on?
Well, in the ag commodities have been strong for a year. My agri-food price index includes 20 commodities. It's up 19% from its 52-week low, and it's up 16% from a year ago. So the commodities have been doing very well and actually getting stronger. Barley has been at a 52-week high for months because there's a shortage of it. World rice, which is important because the world does eat a lot of rice, hit a 52-week high a couple of weeks ago. Yesterday, U.S. cash soybeans hit a 52-week high of $10.22 a bushel. That's just amazing because for 6 months, the commodity analyst is saying that soybean prices are going to get crushed. Then the weather didn't cooperate with them. Feeder steers are within pennies of a 52-week high. Canola, which competes with soybeans, primarily comes out of Canada, is near a 52-week high. Sorghum, which it competes with corn and is a big import by China because it's used in, I'm going to butcher this name, Jim, because I don't have any Chinese in me, baijiu, which is one of the top four liquors in the world and a favorite in China. It's hit a 52-week high. The beef index, which is the USDA's index, hanging and boxed beef, just did a seasonal breakout. So we're going to see beef prices move up from this point on. So we're just seeing good strength in it. A lot of it is some weather issues. Argentina's soybean crop has been hurt by dryness. Australia's sorghum crop has been severely damaged by drought. Brazil, their second corn crop, is looking bad. Now, what is the second corn crop? In parts of Brazil, they plant soybeans as early as they can. And as soon as they get those beans out, they plant corn. So they have what we call second crop corn. That crop is apparently weak. And so what we've seen in the last, about the last month, Jim, is a whole change of attitude on some of these prices. If we went and looked at the futures market a month ago, there was a big argument in the grains. The commercials had a massive long position in wheat, corn, and soybeans. And in the last month, the hedge funds have finally realized they're on the wrong side of history. Well, that's now flip-flopped. And so they've moved along. And it's global demand is just exceptionally strong. That's why world rice prices were high.
You know, you've been talking about the ag sector. Let's talk about two prominent grain distributors, and that's Archer Daniels Midland and Bunge. Bunge missing their earnings and sort of running into trouble lately. What's going on with these stocks? Why aren't they as doing as well as the other sectors?
Until recently, they just didn't seem to be able to get the volumes that they wanted. And what happens, they tend to have some bump in the road now, had been, that there's excess soybean crushing in China, capacity to crush soybeans, too much soy on. But what's going on with these two countries is one of the things I want to talk about. Last year, Glencore talked to Bunge, BG, about buying the company. They signed a standstill agreement that expired this month. Archer Daniels is in the process, it appears, of making an offer for Bunge. There's no statements coming out right now that it's going to happen, but their chief financial officer was talking about their ability to finance the acquisition and things like that. So it looks like we're headed towards ADM acquiring BG.
Ned, that would be almost like a monopoly in a way.
Well, their operations are dissimilar enough that that, yes, they would have to sell some assets. BG is largely Brazil. That's where their roots were. ADM is largely, they do operate in South America. It's largely the United States, and they've been moving toward the Pacific, Australia. They tried to make an acquisition in Australia. They own 23% of Wilmar International, the big palm oil company. And what this would create, there are only four big players in the agri-collector industry. For those listening, these are the companies that gather grains from around the world, process some of them, and then sell them to food companies all around the world. So they are like a giant set of pipelines. Four companies dominate that industry: ADM, BG, Cargill, and Dreyfus. Cargill and Dreyfus are both private companies. So when ADM and BG merge, they will be the biggest and only a big and only publicly traded company in this industry. It would be one of those stocks that portfolio managers would have to own. And the way to look at it now is to buy ADM, because you don't know what BG management is thinking. I know one of the things they're thinking about is saving their jobs, because if they go to Glencore, they don't have a job. So the price for BG may not be outlandish relative to current trading, because management is more worried about having a job.
Yeah, but let's move on to some of the other companies in the sector: Mosaic, Agrium, and then, of course, equipment makers like John Deere. Deere has had a real nice run-up since last year.
The fertilizer stocks, at the end of January, Agrium and Potash merged to form Nutrien, stock symbol NTR. No, it was the end of December they merged. We won't get any financials on that company till April, the new company. So it's in an information void. So the stock has been weak lately. Agrium was unique in fertilizer, but it has the world's largest chain of farm service stores, so that farmer can go in, buy fertilizer, seed, get information on what they can do to make their operation more profitable. So that gives them an advantage over a pure fertilizer company. But the talk is much more optimistic on fertilizer, because the pipeline around the world has wound down over the last few years. And so it's going to be good demand for fertilizer this year, just to refill the pipeline some. The tractor companies, Deere was a stock that was used to play stock market moves. So it was bid up aggressively on whenever the market advanced. It's had good reports, and it keeps, whenever they speak at their quarterly earnings, they hike their operation, a well-run company. However, it dominates a mature market, the North American tractor combine market. AGCO is a much more interesting longer-term play, because it doesn't. Its business is largely outside the United States. It has opened up an entree into China, what they call their Asia-Pacific area operation or something like that. Those sales were up 23% this past year. So AGCO I actually like better, though Deere can be a hotter stock in that period. Another one that's of interest is WFCF, Where Food Comes From, the small company. This is one of the companies that verifies where cattle is born, raised, and slaughtered. If you ever see a picture of a cow, you'll see a device hanging from their ear. That's how they track where this piece of beef has been. Now, we are selling, since President Trump and President Xi had dinner, we have been selling massive amounts of beef to China. We've been out of their market for 13 years. One of the requirements for beef to go to China, that its date and location of birth be verified. And retail packaging for the beef in China will carry information on the life of that cow. WFCF is one of the companies that does this. And it's the only public one I know of. But again, it's a small company. The traders have traded it off. That's one people should look at, too.
Ned, would somebody be better off, since there's different aspects to the ag sector? You got the commodity companies, you have the equipment companies, you have the distributor companies, the fertilizer companies. Would they be better off in an ETF where they get better diversification if they wanted to cover the sector?
Yes. Though, Jim, I continue to have problems with the way Mu structures its index, but it's the only choice. So that is a true part. That's true. You may want diversification immediately.
All right, let's turn to another commodity right now, and let's talk about gold, another sector that you cover. Ned, it looked like it was close to breaking out. Every time it gets up around 1350, 1360, it doesn't seem to be able to hold there.
Well, what seems to happen about that time is we have one of these periods where U.S. interest rates pop up, and all the teenage traders go and short currency futures, buy futures, buy the dollar in the futures market. And that's what did it again. But the fundamentals for the dollar, Jim, are so bad that U.S. trade deficit in December hit a record for this economic cycle of $53 billion. Last year, we had a trade deficit of almost $600 billion. And what that means is when the boat lands in California and they unload the T-shirts and tennis shoes and televisions and cell phones, they load it up with dollar bills and send it back to China. Well, we're now again in a period we haven't seen since about 2005. The U.S. economy is expanding. Employment is looking good. More people are earning wages. And now they're having more money in their paychecks. They're not going to put that $50 a paycheck in the stock market. They're going to go spend it on T-shirts, tennis shoes. And we don't make those goods. The U.S. has squandered all of its investment money on nonsense like Facebook. So now when they go buy those tennis shoes for their kids, it immediately raises our deficit, trade deficit. So that trade deficit is now locked into getting bigger by our positive economic fundamentals. And so that trade deficit is going to get bigger, and we're going to have to send more dollars to foreign countries, which they don't seem to be as enamored with keeping anymore. So the trade fundamentals for the dollar do not support a strong dollar, and it's going to weaken again. And with the other two asset classes being undesirable, I mean, U.S. interest rates are going up. The Federal Reserve said so yesterday. Again, the Federal Reserve has liquidated almost $50 billion of bonds, and they're going to continue to do so. The U.S. Treasury has already borrowed $200 billion this month. They're going to borrow $1 trillion in a 12-month period. That, however, impacts the bond market and the stock market. You don't want to own bonds in the United States anymore. I can't imagine anything more toxic than a bond ETF. The U.S. stock market, and you and I might differ on this, Jim, the U.S. stock market had been in a parabolic formation. And we know a couple of things about parabolic formations. One, they always fail, and they fail painfully. And so we're in a situation now with rising rates, a broken parabolic. Jim, we could see 16,000 on the Dow next year, and there should be no surprise to that. Gold is now the only asset that makes sense. And so I think people should be adamant. The intraday high we're watching, by the way, is 1367. And if we get above that, there's nothing but blue sky for the price of gold. I do sound a little bullish.
So it's got to break out that 1360 level. What do you think is going to be the catalyst? Is it going to be a breakdown of the dollar?
I think it's more likely going to be a breakdown of the stock market. But the dollar has had a very weak rally from a very old situation. Oversold situation. So it would not take much to turn that dollar back down. What that catalyst is going to be, Jim, we don't know ahead of time.
So there's a number of things. It could be the breakdown of the dollar. It could be rising deficits. At least we know that the Treasury is really going to be tapping the markets to raise a lot of cash at a time the Fed is pulling back on its buying. Because, Ned, the CBO says next year we could be looking at trillion-dollar deficits. So when you recommend gold, do you recommend something like an ETF if you want to own the bullion, buying coins, Or what about investing in something like a ETF that covers gold stocks, like a GDX or something like that?
Well, I'm still a little old-fashioned. I think people should own some coins. You don't have to pay ongoing commissions and service fees on coins. But once you got some of that, the gold ETF, GLD, is the easiest way to do it. The gold stock ETF, GDX, is, I think, another way to do it, and probably the best way for individual investors to buy gold stocks. I am very nervous when people start hyping gold stocks. That's like putting your hand in a rattlesnake hole. You really don't know if it's home or not. You don't know if the snake's in there or out hunting. A gold mine is a hole you just keep pouring money in. So the ETF tends to be companies that can actually do this business. So it's an essential insurance part of your portfolio, and especially if you've got an equity portfolio that's high beta. You've got to offset that somehow, because just maybe Wall Street won't always be right.
Ned, final question. In the recent downturn that we got in the stock market, where stocks corrected 10%, gold corrected as well, not as much. It was only down 4%. Why do you think gold did not take off as a safe haven? One of the things that really struck me about the sell-off, in typical huge sell-offs in the past, you saw a movement to the safety trade. You saw a rally in treasuries, a rally in gold, rally in safe sectors like utilities, healthcare, and staples. None of that happened this time. Interest rates remain stubbornly high. The safe sectors like staples, utilities, and healthcare went down. And also, gold went down as well. Was this just a rush for liquidity, so any asset class was sold? I'd like to get your take on that.
Our markets today, Jim, are so dominated by a trading mentality. And what happens on those days is that traders that normally might be trading gold, they see the Dow making these 500-point moves up and down. They just sell their position because there's more money to be made trading those wild swings in the dollar. I mean, I can't believe that real investors are much more than 10% of this whole market. And so those traders go daily to wherever they think there's the most volatility, and they would rather trade 500-point moves in the Dow than make an investment in gold. And so it's just the trading mentality is so dominant that it makes the world almost impossible for the average person that's trying to save money.
Well, it's certainly a different market, and we've seen that develop with the, you know, passive indexing funds and the algo traders. Ned, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow your work, tell them how they could do so, please.
I have two websites, thevalueviewgoldreport.com and agrifoodvalueview.com. And Jim, I just had my first grandchild, so I'm celebrating. Anybody that writes me about an interesting letter, I'll give them a great discount.
All right. Well, that's great. Congratulations, Ned. And I have six myself, so they're kind of fun.
Well, with that big bump we felt about 2 weeks ago in the market, we have learned this year that volatility is back after quite a long period of calm on the ocean of the markets. First 10% correction in 2 years, and now there is a cautionary tone in the markets, along with rising interest rates and inflation. But the economy is getting a second wind. So what does all of this mean, especially for investors and investments, since we find ourselves in a new environment? Funny you should ask that question. That is the subject coming up next in the Big Picture as the Financial Sense News Hour continues at financialsense.com.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.